Hello and welcome to this interview hosted by me, Bo Dade. And today I'm speaking to a very special guest, a member of the Deutsche Bundestag, Mr. Peter Poehringer. How are you?
Thank you, Bo. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's our pleasure. And you're also a vice chairman of the party. As I understand it, you guys are doing increasingly well in the polls. I see that in some parts of Germany, you're up, you've pushed past 20% in the polls. In some places in more eastern Germany, it's even higher up in the 30s.
Now, what can I say? That is the case. It's true. And just about 12 months ago, or exactly 12 months ago, we were half those numbers, both in eastern Germany and on a federal level as well. To some extent, it comes as a surprise for me as well, because we didn't do a lot of things differently compared to what we did 10 years now, since our founding in 2013. But either the other parties have really exaggerated their foolish policy, or we have done something right, or maybe just our time has come now. It's hard to explain, but maybe we can get into that.
It's almost as though something happened to make the people in Germany sort of begin to wake up a bit and sort of change their minds. Because if we could talk just a little bit to begin with, in general, just about German politics, for I think maybe a few of our viewers might not know. But there's obviously the Christian Democrats, there's sort of the Free Democrats and Social Democrats and the Greens and you guys. And of course, you guys are always demonized as far right or even fascist. I saw an article in the Telegraph just the other day saying fascism could become normal in Eastern Germany because you've got a mayor. Of course, it's a slur, really, because there's nothing remotely fascist about you guys, let alone it's not even really right wing. But that's always what's said, the far right.
Yeah, well, you are a UK broadcaster, and I can understand that, especially abroad, when you don't listen to alternative media in Germany, you must have that impression, because basically all mainstream media in Germany, all of them, with almost no exception, are against AfD. Most of us hate us, and they really have an intention to bring our voting count down. By whatever means necessary, they have that intention. Most of them would even admit that. You will hardly find any mainstream journalists or any mainstream articles with positive or just neutral views on our party. So basically, from their point of perspective, and it's really a completely artificial picture they're painting, we are completely 100% bad and evil and, well, fascists, yes, they say that too. That's a joke. I mean, there is not even a clear definition of fascism. The term was coined back in the 1920s or 30s in Italy by Mussolini, and it meant a combination of the industry and politics to the detriment of the people. It has nothing to do whatsoever with nowadays politics, especially not with AfD. And the same goes for the horrible Nazi word. I mean, these days we are termed Nazis, which comes from nationalist socialists. And just imagine, socialists, nothing could be further from the truth. We hate socialism. We fight against socialism on almost every level. Personally, my personal CV shows that I've been doing that for 30 years now in many different roles. So there's nothing good about socialism. Nationalism. No, we're not nationalists. We are patriots, and patriots love their country. And the difference compared to nationalism is that you love your own country and nationalists hate other countries. That's a huge difference here. We are patriots, not nationalists. So everything is wrong. It's a completely artificial picture, but I can understand. And tomorrow I will have an interview with BBC. I'm sure they will come with exactly the same prejudiced voices headlines, because they read the German mainstream media, and you can't get possibly an objective picture about AfD if you only follow German mainstream.
Yeah, no, I'm sure the BBC will be extremely biased against you. I'd put good money on that. Yeah, you mentioned the N word there. The N word, no, people must not say Nazi. I mean, of course, that, yeah, of course, you're slurred. You're always. It's just whenever whenever AfD is mentioned, it's just the far right AfD. It's just not fair. Yeah, you mentioned sort of the roots of fascism there with Mussolini. I think, you know, like the word, the root of it maybe comes from like fasces, in the Roman word of many sticks together, you know, like together yes. we are strong, you know, a bundle of sticks. Being a patriot, or the very idea of populism, the way the BBC and lots of mainstream media here, and I'm sure it's the same in your country, but the very concept of populism itself is somehow wrong-headed. I mean, the patriotism itself is evil. It's crazy.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the way it is and has been for many decades, especially in Germany. Well, it was understandable to some extent after 1945. Nobody wanted to and could dare to be in any way patriotic in Germany. We were not very proud after 1945 about what happened before 1945, especially in those infamous 12 years. So that's understandable, but it's been 70 years now. So, and well, we have learned our lesson. AfD has learned that lesson too, as every German has in the meantime, with almost no exception. When we were founded and still are a conservative, liberal, but also patriotic party. There is no contradiction in that. By liberal, maybe I have to explain that. I don't mean the liberal in the American sense of the word, because there it really is a synonym for left politics, it's really left is liberal in the US. But the classical liberal stance, which I stand for, comes from the 19th century, long before it was used in the US. And it is just, well, the liberal, libertas in Latin is freedom. We are freedom lovers. And yes, there must be some rules in a society, and you can over-exaggerate liberalistic approaches in politics. You can, in some areas, maybe leave a little bit too much freedom. For example, when it comes to drug trading. But this is not our problem. AfD is a conservative party. We, in many respects, we want to go back to policies that the Christian Democrats, the Liberal Democrats, and even the Social Democrats had been following up until the 1980s, 90s, and even 2000s. This is more or less our program, which had been their program. So if we are extremists these days, all those parties in Germany, and they had probably a two-third majority in the Deutsche Bundestag at the time, were extremists at the time. That's just ridiculous. Ridiculous. But yes, we also dare to speak out the word patriots. We also are patriots. We love our own country. And I think it's a sane approach. Almost every nation in the world even promote or foster that attitude with their people. So I don't think that's something to be ashamed of.
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely not. Not in any way, shape or form. You mentioned there's sort of the idea of liberalism or classical liberalism, sort of not being authoritarian. And that sort of leads me into my next question, that the Overton window perhaps is not the best way to describe it, but just the whole idea that authoritarianism is on the rise from the left. Because I saw recently that there's been some noises in Germany of perhaps trying to actually ban AfD outright, just ban it. I wonder if you could talk to me a little bit about that, whether that is really sort of on the cards. Is that really likely to happen?
Let me not start with the ban itself. Let's go back one step and to begin with. Yes, it's also my feeling, just as you put it, that it is the left these days who are the authoritarians. Especially, exactly what maybe in the past or in history the right-wing parties were considered to be. But today it's clearly the left, especially the Greens. They want to forbid everything. They want to forbid us how to heat our homes, how to drive, what to drive, and so on. You know what I'm talking about. The woke and movement is all about forbidding things. So it's clearly authoritarian. It's almost as authoritarian as a right-wing government could be. Way more authoritarian that we could ever be and would ever be, maybe in a little bit other areas, different areas. So again, this is a joke. It's an Orwellian twist to say that we are authoritarian. It all comes from very authoritarian people. But we have to deal with that. It's a parallel world. It's an artificial, lying world that is all over the place in the German media about us. And in general, and I'm sure it's the same in the UK too. I'm following that too a little bit. Especially in the US, it has become very authoritarian. Look at the universities there. It's incredible how those were the cradles of freedom in the past. No longer so. Well, yeah, and those people who are authoritarian, they have sent the so-called Verfassungsschutz. I call them the government protecting agency. The official translation would be the Constitution Protection Agency, but I call them the government protection agency. They have some authority because officially they have the task by law to look at extreme parties and extreme movements and to observe them. They've been doing that with us for several years now, didn't really find a lot. All they found were word crimes, something like we use the long language, as all the other parties do. And sometimes we have a few people using the unwise words, but we don't have the power to do anything. We are not extreme in any way. These are not word crimes from the leading group of the AfD, but usually second, third, fourth ranks. Nothing serious about that. We have some 30,000 members alone. Sometimes even sentences or quotes from non-members are attributed to us or against us. By the government protecting agency. It's an agency reporting to the Interior Ministry, Ministry of the Internal Affairs, led by a leftist, a radical leftist, Secretary of State, Mrs. Faeser. And she really is extremist left. And she, since she got power, she has immediately exchanged the head of the Verfassungsschutz, of the government protecting agency, more or less, well, serious or normal guy was exchanged by a left extremist again. He is on record saying that he sees this as his task to bring down AfD's election results. Imagine that. So he's not neutral in any way, but he has the power to observe us by secret service means. And he brings out a report at least once a year and on the regional level 10 times a year. And they keep saying these are extremists, the AfD, without real evidence. We are fighting that in court, but it's a difficult and expensive process trying to bring that away. It's all obstacles in our way. And now they have come to the point, especially since our election results have doubled in the last 12 months, that obviously they see no other exit but to start a process of banning AfD. It really is true. Since that happened, I get a lot of interview requests, especially from abroad. That's interesting because the German media wouldn't see it as an important development. But abroad, and especially in the UK, the cradle of modern democracy, you see it obviously as something serious, and it is something serious. It's very serious. I mean, you cannot defend democracy, as Mr. Haldenwang, the head of the Verfassungsschutz, claims, by abolishing democracy, and that's what he's basically doing. So I'm not sure if they will ever go to that point, banning us, but it costs a lot of money. It is, of course, completely against our reputation. It is hard to get rooms for gatherings if you are coined extremist and if you are under threat of being banned, and so on and so on. It really inhibits our work, and it is undemocratic, absolutely. So yes, personally, I'm in charge as the vice chairman of AfD for leading that those court fights against the Verfassungsschutz. But it's incredible. They have brought together 10,000 pages against us. Something a lot of it is complete rubbish. It's irrelevant material. It doesn't prove anything. And if it does prove anything, it's third or fourth rank officials. We have of those 10,000 pages, I would say only 10 of 20 are really relevant, and we have to deal with those cases. And we would have done that internally anyway. So we're doing everything we can, but yes, it's true, they try to ban us.
Well, good luck with the court battles. Absolutely. I mean, it really is sort of a really quite a disgusting, perverse thing to see you persecuted like that, just a bit like Donald Trump in America. Just the inverse of the truth, that they're trying to protect democracy whilst absolutely undermining democracy. I mean, it's a terrible thing.
To some extent, we're copying currently Mr. Trump's counter strategy, because I heard he has made his police photo public himself, and it has brought in some 7 million of grants to him or his party. So we also not only defend ourselves in the courtroom, and we are already at the highest court, I must say, of course we fight that politically as well. We are talking about things like AfD saying we love our Heimat is the term for home country. Nothing wrong about that, but this in itself is already being deemed as extremist and right-wing extremists by the Verfassungsschutz. Even though, of course, it's perfectly legal. These guys have never bring in an indictment against us. That may be the difference to Donald Trump. There is no indictment against us. Nobody has pressed charges here. But the Verfassungsschutz wants to kill our reputation with voters. It's not working. But you never know. It's a hard fight anyway.
Well, in the case of Donald Trump, it seems to be counterproductive, if anything. People see through it, see it as an unjust persecution, and his support grows, if anything, from it. So hopefully that will be the case with you as well. I mean, if I could sort of maybe cut to the quick, where you mentioned sort of the idea of a homeland or a home country, a mother country, a father country, something like that they see that very concept, that people would dare to vocalize a love for their own country, their own nation, that is extreme, that is something that needs to be sort of stamped out and squashed. I mean, in Germany, I think you guys unfortunately are up against a lot more. I mean, like I say, if I could just cut to it, there's the ghost of Hitler, isn't there? There's sort of the endless harking back to the history of the mid 20th century, that the very concept that you could be a German patriot is seen to be wrong-headed, and of course it isn't. You know, just because the National Socialists existed, it means you can never be proud to be German ever again. So my question is this: do you think that anti-fascism, because we have Antifa, don't we, in all across the world, actually, in our countries and America, there's Antifa. Anti-fascism seems to me that concept has also been co-opted just to mean a destruction of the West. Anti-fascism is just a destruction of any concept of patriotism. Do you think I'm going too far saying things like that?
No, you're not, especially not because it's a global movement and it's called Antifa all over the world, even though it has nothing to do with fighting the real fascists of the 1930s. And yes, being a German, of course, we have learned our lesson in history. I was born in 1969, so long after the war. But still, everybody in my generation, also in the current generation, grows up very consciously about those infamous 12 years, 1933 to 45. So maybe Germany shouldn't be the most patriotic country in the world. And AfD is very aware of that, and we are not. But the way we love our country is completely normal, even probably less pronounced than in most other countries. and it has been completely normal even in Germany in the, say, 1970s through the 2000s. It is only in the last 20 years that things completely change. Society moved to a completely to the left, to the far left. And if you only stand still or stood still, as personally I did, and probably most AfD people did, you became right-wing or even extremely right without changing your opinion in any way, which was not extreme, say, 20, 30 years ago. This is, I think, what happens all over the world. The same has happened in America as well, especially when you look at the universities there. The Antifa, anti-fascists, has nothing to do with fighting right-wing fascists that are really dangerous. They are dangerous. They are brutal. They exert violence all the time, all over the world, especially in Germany. AfD knows what I'm talking about because almost every horse violently being disturbed by the Antifa and isolators in foreign countries too. So yes, this is a worldwide movement. Well, we could probably spend a whole evening discussing how this came about. But yes, yeah, especially in Germany, it is a brutal reality.
Perhaps it's a good time to sort of talk about the war with Russia. Now, of course, famously, Moscow and Berlin haven't always seen eye to eye. But in the post-war years with NATO, of course, it's a whole different thing. And then once the fall of the Berlin Wall and unification of Germany, sort of a whole new game again. Now, I'd really want to know your feelings or AfD's feelings about Putin, about sort of Moscow's expansion. Whether do you believe the narrative that they want to ultimately invade Poland and invade the Balkan states and just endlessly take land? What are your feelings on all of this?
Let me start with, as I already said, I'm a communist eater. I have grown up as a hater of the Soviets and the communists. In my my parents were completely against the communists. I grew up in Western Germany, we didn't want socialism, and obviously we didn't really know much about the Soviet Union because nobody knew a lot about the Soviet Union before 1989. It was really terra incognita. We knew more about Australia than about Eastern Europe. We didn't like the political system, the economic system, but it didn't bother a lot because we had the war. But yes, I grew up, and I think most of my colleagues in the AfD party in Western Germany grew up with those feelings of the Cold War. So nobody really liked the Russians, and especially not the Soviets. And yes, we were educated and taught, maybe under American influence, that the Soviets want to invade the whole world. They want to spread communism all over the world. And obviously there was the Korean War, there was the Soviet, the Vietnam War in the 1970s still. China, the communist China and communist Russia tried to spread their ideology all over the world. That's the spirit many of us in Western Germany had up until 1989. But then obviously things changed. The Soviet Union fell apart in 91. We had that Yeltsin era, those 10 years. Yeltsin was just a puppet of the West, especially of the Americans. He was drunk all the time anyway. he gave away all the wealth of the former Soviet Union basically to oligarchs and to the West. But those oligarchs mostly were, many of them, let's put it like that, were steered by the West. So they were good oligarchs from a Western point of view. And then we had Putin coming to power, I think in 1999 or 8. Well, he came from the Secret Service, from the KGB in the Soviet Union. and we didn't really know what to expect, but he held interesting speeches. I've been following that already at the time, 25 years ago. He gave a very interesting speech addressed towards Germany, towards the European Union in 2000, again in 2002, I think even in the Bundestag, another time in 2007 in the Bundestag. We have been following that. It may be true that he wants to restore some of the former Russian glory. Some say the Tsarist glory, some say the Soviet glory. It may be true. But I think he's realist enough to know that, A, he can never bring back again the old Tsarist Reich. And secondly, socialism doesn't really work. He has been working as a secret agent in former Eastern Germany. He speaks fluent German. He knows how bad the situation was in the former GDR before 1989. He knows the reason why that country broke together for economic reasons. So I don't think he is a socialist and not even a communist. He may be a nationalist, a Russian nationalist. Yes, to some extent he is. I believe that. We need not be complete friends with him. But up until 2022, we tried as AfD to have normal relationships in the Bismarckian sense. Bismarck tried to have good relations with his neighbors and the great powers of the world at the time in the 19th century. And we have to try that too. Germany is no big power itself, so it has to have good relations and good relations with a very rich country in terms of raw materials like Russia is important. We have been receiving a lot of Russian gas until 2022 from Russia, very cheap. Quite a bit of German prosperity can be attributed to that cheap gas from Russia. So it is really a tragedy that the pipeline was blown up by somebody, whoever that was. And well, we to this very day, we say, okay, one day this infamous war will be over and we have to have relationships again with them. I personally no longer, as I did in the 1980s, think that the Russians, if we don't stop them in Ukraine, they will stand at the Rhine, at the western border of Germany next week and the week after that in Portugal. That's more or less what the Cold War warriors are still thinking. It is not what I think any longer. Yes, we have to be critical with Russia. And yes, their invasion of the Ukraine, February 24th last year, was officially against all international law. It was in this, an offensive war. Having said that, of course, that war hasn't started in 2022. It has started in 2014, when the at the time, well, Moscow-friendly or neutral ruler had been replaced with quite some Western influence by a Western puppet. And this happened in 2014. Even that could have been accepted. But, well, the Ukraine, as many countries, have ethical differences. They have Russian ethicals in the very east and in the Crimea. And those people, they didn't really want to be ruled by Kiev because they want to speak their own language. And Kiev didn't grant them minority rights for many years. They had to speak Ukrainian as opposed to their native Russian. They were the pensions were not paid from Kiev, and at the end they were even bombshelled from Ukrainian territory. So this is not very nice to deal with one's own own people. So I was not surprised that the referendum in Crimea ended, I think, with a 94% consent. We want to belong to Russia. And, well, it's difficult to hold a fair referendum in the far east of Ukraine, in the Donbas. But if you held it, and if you had held it 15 or 20 months ago before the war, you still would have had a large majority for Russia. And at a certain point in time, when people or armies bomb each other, you have to come to the conclusion, well, it's better to divide the country up. It had been divided anyway before February 2020. There was an uncalled war already, civil war. There was a demarcation line between the Ukraine forces and the Russian forces. It's more or less the current front, with a few exceptions at the Black Sea. And, well, I think the only way to lasting freedom there is to divide the ethnicities and the language, the different language-speaking areas up. And ultimately, maybe even this year or next year, this will probably be the solution, even though it's a difficult solution. We are seeing the same in the Balkans, when the same happened in 1999 after the Yugoslavia wars. It's a stable situation, not completely stable, especially not stable, where they did not manage to divide the ethnic groups apart from each other. This is not all official AfD party line, what I just said, but this is my personal opinion. Problem is that the official international law forbids changing borders. But, well, we have been doing that in the past. It has been done at the Kosovo and the Serb after the war, NATO against Serbia in 1999. It had been done before, and sometimes it is inevitable to... in order to bring a war to an end. I think this is more or less a majority view also within my party, but that was my personal opinion.
So you're not for an endless war in the Donbass then? I mean, it's almost, Peter, you're suggesting then that history didn't begin in 2014, that the story might be a bit deeper, there might be a bit more to it, that history goes back for, in fact, hundreds and hundreds of years, the Kievan Rus and the long, long relationship between Russians okay, now that, and
now that,
Kiev.
Now that you're leading me there, yes, it's true historically that I think in the 18th or 17th century already, the Kiev Rus was the cradle of the Russian nation, and obviously that was Ukraine. The region of Ukraine only got into existence, I think, 100 or 150 years ago, and it didn't play a big role because within the vast area of the USSR, the former USSR, nobody cared. Everybody spoke Russian, even in Kiev. They didn't really speak Ukrainian there. Everybody had to speak Russian. And it was only Nikolai Khrushchev in 1954 who gave away, for example, the Krim to the Ukraine. Because he happened to be Ukrainian, Nikolai Khrushchev, even though he was Secretary of State and President in Moscow, but he happened to be Ukrainian, and for some reason, some say he was drunk when he gave away the Krim for no obvious reason to Ukraine. So this only was a 70-year period that the Ukrainians belonged to a region called Ukraine, which didn't play a role in any way before 1991, up until the Soviet Union collapsed. It only then really came into existence. And only then, well, the old ethnic differences between Ukrainians and Russians played out. And it's the same all over the world. People, it's easier for people to get along with each other in one nation state if they speak the same language. I mean, here we do not even have religious differences. All of them are Christian Orthodox Christians, and still they want to be in their own native language area. And for the very east of Ukraine, this happens to be Russia. Nobody can help it.
It's almost as though homogeneity is a strength rather than diversity being a strength. But I wanted to move on, unfortunately, because the time is of the essence and there's many more things I'd love to ask you about. One thing I would like to just quickly touch upon is you mentioned there about energy and the gas Germany would get from Russia. And you mentioned the pipeline that was blown up there. And I don't want to put you under too much pressure, but it did strike me as extremely odd, at least in the UK press, that when that happened, everyone... especially German politicians just seem to shrug and throw their hands up and look the other way and not point any fingers and just be very quiet about it and just move on. That seemed very odd to me. I wonder what your thoughts were on that.
It is indeed very odd the silence was basically a scandal. Mr. Scholz, our chancellor, didn't say a word. He didn't even investigate, really. He didn't even investigate, really. The damage done to our economy is incredible. If you calculate the price of gas or power that is made out of that gas before the pipeline was struck and after that, and if you multiply that with the amount of gas we need in Germany, it comes down to a damage of, I calculated, more than 100 billion euros a year. That is the real damage in energy costs alone. And just imagine what that means for our industry. We are in a phase of deindustrialization now. That's very clear. And a lot of it has to do with the energy prices that are several factors higher than, for example, in the US. And currently, I don't know about the UK. I think you still have some own gas resources and some coal resources, and you haven't gone away from nuclear power yet. So you have alternatives, but the leftist and green German government, they have already switched off all nuclear power energy. They're about to switch off all coal, even though currently this is not happening, because otherwise we would have a permanent blackout. And the gas is also shrinking, or we need liquid natural gas now from much higher cost than the Russian pipeline gas. So we have no real replacement, and obviously the solar and wind power are no real replacement, because they are not always available.
It's almost
yes, it is a scandal that the Chancellor didn't say anything.
It is almost as though the globalists and the socialists and the Greens want people to live in cold and darkness. It's almost as if that's their aim. But you did touch there upon the economy, and I want to ask you about that, because you are first and foremost, are you not, an economist? You know, I understand you've written a lot about the sort of the German gold reserves, and that is your speciality in your professional life, is to work on the budget and all that sort of thing. So I just wanted to ask you, how the German, what your views are in a broadest sense on the German economy. How's it going? And if you could link that into your views or AfD's views on being a member of the EU itself?
Oh, man.
A big question, I know, a big question.
Where to start? It's obviously, we see things going in very wrong directions. It has to do with the much higher energy costs. This was not only the fault of the war, and not only brought about by the attack on the pipeline, but it already started earlier. For no real reason, Mrs. Merkel, our chancellor at the time in 2011, basically overnight decided to go off nuclear power after the Fukushima accident. And in hindsight, it was not necessary. Even the Japans have restarted their nuclear program again. There is the, well, how shall I call it, the credo. The belief, the fundamental belief, the religion, the CO2 religion, the net zero religion, which our government and the so-called conservative government under the Christian Democrats, under Chancellor Merkel since 2005, have been following. They have been following that credo, that religion. I really call it a religion, because we could talk about ours now. The thesis that man-made CO2 is basically the sole reason why the world will go under in 80 years because of 1.5 degrees more is completely unproven. It is probably based on false premises, unproven modeling, and so on, and even data corruption. Everything is false. It is just plainly wrong. But with the exception of my party, everybody in the Bundestag is following that credo, that CO2 religion. So there is a huge majority against us, 80%, I must say. And we have to get rid of that. Otherwise, we can't heal. Every second law in the Bundestag that is being passed has something to do with CO2. And it's really deindustrializing our economy. So I see really Germany's economy deteriorating for that very reason alone. Then I could go on with too high taxes and obviously too high regulations, especially brought about from Brussels, too high payments to Brussels. I know that the UK has no easy time after the Brexit, but still I believe the Brexit was the right thing to do. And you sometimes have to think about what would have happened had you remained in the European Union. You would have all that regulations we are suffering under. You would have nowadays the EU is taking on debt, common debt, against the contracts of the euro. The euro was founded on in 1992. There's a Ukrainian debt package about 750 billion euros, and Britain would probably have to had swallowed something like a seventh of that. Incredible amounts. You don't have that. So I know it's difficult. It's not so easy because Brussels is playing it unfair. They don't negotiate your Brexit process so well and so nicely. But still, it was the right thing to do. And yes, my party also is willing to leave the European Union. We're not saying we want to do that overnight, but we ultimately, if negotiations fail, then we would do that. If negotiations fail, mean we would have quite a good negotiation position, because if Germany left the EU, the EU would be passed or gone within one week. So everybody knows that. Actually, I was surprised that after the Brexit, the EU was not yet gone. But obviously, you were. It was just possible for the EU to survive without the UK, but well, they couldn't survive without Germany leaving as well. That's very clear. So we would have a good negotiation position. The current government is not playing that card in any way. They're giving in everywhere. And this has nothing to do with the leader of the EU Commission is currently a German lady, Ursula von der Leyen. She is not really a German in that role. she's really working against Germany. Just take the corona measures, and she has and the infamous SMS deal she did with Pfizer, a 35 billion euro deal she negotiated by SMS with the Pfizer CEO. Just imagine that. That is what is being done in Brussels, and it's unreformable, I believe. But even an AfD government would try to reform them, but I'm not sure if we would succeed.
I mean, I do think if Germany left, it would be some sort of death blow to Brussels. I mean, it would be absolutely, from my point of view, it'd be absolutely amazing to see. It would be some sort of actual justice being meted out. But you mentioned there about CO2 religion. Go on.
Just one sentence before we come to the CO2 religion again. You're right. Yes, it would be the end of the EU. I think that too. I don't hide that fact in election speeches or something like that. But we have to remind people there was a time before EU. EU was only founded in 1992. Nobody from AfD people would have gone on the streets and protest against the European Economic Union, EEC, before 1992, or the European Community, EG, EC, which it was only after 1992 when we really started the current EU. It was after 2007 when we got the Lisbon treaties. It was after 2000 when we had the euro. That's when things went wrong. And obviously, we had the permanent euros rescue as of 2010, which is basically still ongoing to this very day with incredible amounts. That was the reason why AfD was founded in 2013, because we were a protest party against the first rescue umbrella for the euro in 2013, called at the time ESM, European Security ESM. It was a 600 billion package. And that was the reason why we founded ourselves, and it's still our position. We don't want to rescue the euro every day, because it can be really fatal one day, even for the nation states within the EU.
You know, absolutely. I mean, just as a Leave voter myself, I just don't want supranational bodies sitting over Westminster or Berlin.
Absolutely.
I don't want to see a court in Strasbourg telling Englishmen or Germans what they can or can't do. I don't want any of that. I don't want to see any of these organizations. And well, that's what I was going to get onto, is that with this, you mentioned the CO2 religion. It's like a faith. Yeah, I feel that CO2 isn't, it's not pollution. It doesn't drive climate change. It's a few 400 odd parts per million, you know, of the atmosphere. It's plant food, carbon dioxide. So no, I don't buy any of that narrative. But then so it begs the question then, why in our countries and America and mostly of the West, all these same people don't seem to say a peep about fossil fuels being burnt in India or China. So what are they playing at? What is their end goal really just to destroy our economies and to destroy our nations as they exist? Am I being too cynical? Yeah.
No, you're not too cynical. It's right. We could discuss CO2 religion fundamentally because it's really fundamentally wrong and we are being lied to on almost all levels. We could also discuss the religion quantitatively, and it's correct that the Western and European countries, the UK, also Germany, have really only neglectable amounts of CO2 emission compared to the likes of China, Australia, the US, Russia, India, Indonesia and a few others. They make up together more than 70 or 80%. And even if you believed the models of the IPCC, the World Climate Council, then the quantitative effect, even if we abolished ourselves and our industries in Europe, would be minuscule. Almost unmeasurable. So yes, of course, your question is justified. Why? And personally, I believe it's a big business. It's a very big business and has been prepared for many decades. The idea that CO2 is the most important factor in some sort of temperature rise was invented in 1995 around at a Tokyo climate conference. It was intensified in Copenhagen in 2009. A lot of lobbying was brought in. Many professors were bribed, really, I have to put it like that, to support the climate narrative. A lot of money and effort has been put into that for a long time. It's a big business. Many people make a lot of money, and we're currently negotiating the German budget for 2024. And I would say about one third of the German budget, roughly 250 billion, can be attributed to that CO2 religion. Those expenses wouldn't exist, would we not believe, or would our government not believe in that CO2 religion. Of course, AFD would abolish all those expenses, I believe, with no harm whatsoever to the world or to the temperature, world temperature. But so that would be a quick win. We could easily free a lot of money here. Unfortunately, our industry has been damaged for good, irreparably, in many industries. That's bad. There are so many aspects here, so many that there are winners here, a lot of winners. And of course, and also this narrative, the CO2 religion, also helps to bring about global government, similar to the corona virus, which also triggered a lot of emergency law. Also in Germany, we have given away in emergency pandemic situations in the future quite a few of our fundamental rights to the WHO, the World Health Organization, which would have been unthinkable had the corona crisis, which also was artificially blown up, had not happened. And the same seems to be happening currently with the CO2 religion. I could give quite a few examples, but we need too much time for that now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I could ask, if we could touch upon one last big topic, if that's okay, I'd like to ask you about immigration, mass immigration, and sort of, it didn't just start with Angela Merkel in 2015, of course. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your thoughts and feelings and the party's policies on how or if immigration, mass immigration, has changed the very fabric of German society. Because in Britain, we've had mass immigration. It has certainly done that. It's changed the nature of our towns and cities, of our demographic. And I just want to get a German perspective on all that sort of thing, if you would.
The short answer is yes, it has changed a lot. It has divided Germany quite in some extent, even though many people don't dare to speak out against mass immigration, illegal mass immigration, that is, because they fear that about their jobs even, and their reputation. It's just not allowed to really discuss that. AfD is the first exception. We're the only party who dares to speak out opposition. We were not founded on this topic, I must say. In 2013, we had quite a few immigration, and there were people opposed to too much immigration, but it was not so much a bigger topic. It was only after Mrs. Merkel really gave up German borders and European borders in September of 2015, and it has not been repaired yet. She really gave it up illegally. It was illegal and is still an illegal state of affairs in Germany and in Europe. The legal immigration into Germany, according to Article 16A of our Constitution, is only valid for political refugees that can really prove they have been or they are politically persecuted abroad. And yes, we have to allow them in. Normally, but that's only less than, I guess, 1% of those people coming into Germany, less than 1%. That wouldn't be a political issue. And even though the UK currently seems to have problems with the boats coming from France, I have to tell you, it is nothing compared to what Germany is currently seeing. We are seeing an influx of 500 to 800 or even 1,000, even a million people per year. Imagine that. And almost nobody had of those would have, in my legal opinion, a right to be here. Not according to the Geneva Convention and not according to our own constitution. There just is no fundamental right for that. Otherwise, they could have come 20 years ago, but had they come and some came, they were thrown out immediately because they were no political victims and they couldn't prove. But if you don't send people back, and that's if you let them in, and if you don't send them back immediately or pretty quickly after an examination of whether they are valid immigrants or not, then of course the word spreads all over the world, and it did within minutes or days or weeks, and now everybody is coming. I mean, I've heard the Trump interview with, I think, Tucker the other day. And he also complained about the South American refugees, and he would put that wall in Mexico or in Texas and up and stop those people from coming because they're all illegal. And he also mentioned, Mr. Trump, that the U.S. are seeing people not only from South America, but they come in from everywhere. If you let people in and there is no border, then they come. You cannot even blame them. Of course they want to come because they are in... Well, they come from either war zones or just are in economically difficult countries, and they have nothing to lose, so they come to rich countries. It has always been that way, but in nation states, you cannot just let that happen. And Mrs. Merkel did let it happen for no reason. It has not been healed. There has never been a legal ground for allowing those people in. I would say 95% of them. The exception of the other 5%, where one would have to look into, but AfD would never have made a topic from that if we were only talking about those 5%, who also had been a topic before, not 2013. So it's really the quantitative escalation and also the qualitative escalation in that law was officially disobeyed by our very government, and that is true since 2015, and we already have the second government. This is the second government not obeying our laws. This is a permanent scandal, and yes, we say it, and people also vote us for this. It's not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons.
You mentioned that you say, because it's a similar in our country where our government apparently are unable to stop these boats. Apparently unable to enforce a policy on even legal immigration, to have any sort of cap, any mention of a cap on it is beyond the pale, apparently. And on the southern border in America, these sort of globalists. You mentioned there that Mrs. Merkel did it for no reason. I wonder if it was really for absolutely no reason or whether she had a nefarious reason, whether these people actively want to see the end of Western nations as we know it. Traitors, right.
I know that theory. Personally, I see some possibility that it is true. The problem is I cannot prove it. We are now in territory where I cannot prove it. But yes.
Proof's in the pudding, isn't it? Proof's in the destruction of our countries in front of our very eyes, is it not?
The theories are out there. I know that there are a lot of indications that you are right, that it is done intentionally. But even there, when I say that, should I just confirm what you just said? The Deutsche Regierungsschutz, the Government Protection Agency, would hold that against me. And
I
say
don't
you
want
are
to do that to you.
Extremist.
So fair enough.
All I can do is say yes, you're probably right. The only question is whether it's done intentionally, and if it's done intentionally, by whom is it done intentionally, for what reason? But yes, there are people, and I think I can say that openly, who say that it is easier to govern the world as opposed to nation states. And there are economic reasons for having a world government. Yes, I know all those theories, but we are in territory where it's difficult to prove.
No, okay, Peter, that's fair enough. I don't want to put you under any more undue pressure. So, Peter, I know I've taken up a fair amount of your time here, perhaps, and so I'm extremely appreciative for you coming on and talking to us. I'll end it there. But once again, I wish you guys, the AfD, I wish you guys all the best in the polls and in the courts. And I really hope that maybe Germany can turn a corner.
Yes, same for you. All the best, and also to the Lotus Eaters channel and to your listeners. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.